Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Extra Point Podcast. My name's Todd. I'm one of the pastors at First Family Church. Today's Tuesday, September 2nd. It's the day after Labor Day. I'm glad you're tuning in. Hope you had a good holiday. We're glad you're on board listening today. And I'm looking forward to sharing a bit more about really just one comment, or maybe I should say one perspective that I shared in the message, which was an overview of 2 Timothy. Sunday, we did begin a new series through 2 Timothy. It's called Final Words. And Sunday, we were able to give an overview of the book, the four themes that I believe emerge from the book, four key words. We read it as a congregation. And in talking about the four themes, in one of them, I explained and I stated that Christianity is viewed differently now than it was 30, 40 years ago. And it's probably less time than that, by the way. It may even just be a matter of maybe 10 to 15 years. But my point was, this is a different day for those who are Christians. And I made this case that 20 to 30 years ago, Christianity was seen as untrue. And so those who were opposed to Christianity would look at us and say, we disagree with you. It was much more pluralistic in that time. And so ideas could live together, even if they disagree. They could live together civilly, so to speak, in a society, because folks would say, well, I don't believe that. I do believe this. Others would say, well, I don't believe that. I believe this. And you found a way to live civilly because you would say, well, that's not true. Others would say, well, it is true. And I explained even in the message that often, in those days, there was a lot of writing from the Christian perspective about evidence, and we approach things intellectually and from a reasonable standpoint, and I'm really thankful for that. Like I mentioned, I'm not downing or demeaning that at all, but books like The Case for Christ or The Case for Faith or Evidence That Demands a Verdict, those types of books were very prominent, but things have shifted, and now folks who oppose Christianity don't just say, well, that's untrue. They now say Christianity's unsafe. And instead of just disagreeing with us, they now say you are dangerous. And we're seeing a shift in actually what is allowed. We're seeing different tactics from those who oppose us. They no longer want to live together as, you know, perhaps tolerating different ideas. There's now a scheme and a design and a measured effort to try to make sure that things that are Christian or biblical, you know, the moral aspects that should govern society, that those are outlawed, that there's not a way to say that these are the way our society will live. And so they consider Christianity dangerous. Now, there's a whole reason for that. I won't get into it on this podcast. My point is, when I was making those statements and kind of making the case for the kind of culture that we live in and that will be that way in the future in an increasing fashion, it did breed a number of comments and people asking questions about that contrast. One person even said very specifically, can you share more about that on the podcast? And so I wanted to do that and honor that request. I think it will also bring some insight to the many other people who asked questions or were curious about it or who agreed, but maybe had never heard it put in that way. The idea of something, you know, 25 years ago was considered untrue. Now people consider it unsafe. They used to say to us, we disagree with you. Now they say to us, you are dangerous. And I draw a lot of this from a book I read about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago. It's a book by Aaron Wren. Aaron's a Christian, a good thinker, a good writer. And Aaron wrote the book called Life in the Negative World. I remember when I first read it, I got several copies and gave them to our kids. They were all over one evening for dinner. This is before two of them left for the mission field. And so we all gathered for what we call a mishpoka, and we had all the grandkids and all the kids, and we just were eating, and I gave them all a copy of the book because I think it does describe and lay out what's ahead, what's coming, and it gives some good strategies for how to live in what he terms to be the negative world. When I made the case Sunday about what's going on now as compared to 25 or 30 years ago, a lot of that came from Aaron's book, I learned a lot from it, as well as just my own observation, and I would even say informal research, other things I've read. And so let me just give you a breakdown real briefly of why Aaron calls it the negative world, because you may hear that and you may think he means that you're learning to live around a bunch of pessimistic people. That's not the point of the book at all. He actually breaks it, the culture down into three types of worlds. And it's a very recent, I'll use the word framework. He says that pre-1994, in other words, everything before that, at least here in this immediate culture, and I think he means the Western world, or we could even say America, pre-1994, it was a positive world. And what he means by that is Christianity really had social standing. In fact, in the 50s, over half of the U.S. population attended Sunday services. That's a stat. You can verify that. And so I'm not saying they were all legitimate Christians, but there was a social standing to being, can I use the word religious? And perhaps for many of them, actually Christian. But pre-1994, it was a very positive world if you were a Christian. A pastor was considered a very good thing. You received a lot of, social standing. Your credibility was high in the community. Many times, events opened in prayer, even if they weren't religious events. And often, America was considered to be, at least from a social point of view, somewhat Christian. But in 1994, Aaron contends that things became more neutral. And he says from 1994 till about 2014, Christianity was simply tolerated. And in his book, he does talk a good bit about Bill Clinton being this apparent Christian, and that's what Bill Clinton would have said he was. I wouldn't agree with that at all. But he says Bill Clinton was one of the first to maintain a Christian posture and yet somehow bring in, abortion and other kind of liberal, progressive, unbiblical policies and practices, and somehow kind of gather them under one umbrella. So he does talk a bit about Bill Clinton and this sense of like, well, you can probably be Christian, and it's just one thing you could be, and you could also be something else. And so tolerance became kind of the key word. And he says there, Christianity not only was tolerated, but Aaron makes the point that it became kind of a privatized, culturally optional preference. He says the phrase, don't ask, don't tell in various areas just kind of became a moniker for how we approached even Christianity. And so he says for those years, 1994 to about 2014, it was more of a neutral world for Christians. You could be a Christian, but you could also be a Muslim. You may be something else. You may be an agnostic. And there were various things, and they were all equal, and it was civil. It was tolerated to be any of those. There wasn't one that was considered better or necessarily right or wrong. They just were different options. But he says then, in 2014, and he goes to the Obergefell decision, legalizing same-sex marriage in all 50 states, Aaron says that that's the moment that it became a negative world, that suddenly Christianity was not considered neutral, and it certainly was not positive. He says it became negative to be a Christian, that suddenly holding to biblical morality, holding to a Christian sexual ethic, holding to biblical standards and living in light of biblical principles, it was seen as socially disfavored. It was considered harmful. And so I like his framework. I like the way he approaches this. I think he's got some key cultural markers when it comes to timelines. And it does seem, at least historically, to play out that way. Now, we're still very new to this. Be honest with you, 1984 is just very recent history, if it's history at all, okay? But I think he does make some really good, poignant remarks and observations concerning recent history and how things are looking for us currently. And so that's what he means when he says living in a negative world or life in a negative world. That's the actual title of the book. He's referring to how Christianity is viewed. And it was positive pre-1994. He maintains it was somewhat neutral between 94 and 2014. And since 2014, he contends it has actually a negative. You have a negative view. It's not considered socially credible to be a pastor. Those kind of positions are looked down upon, generally speaking. Being a Christian is even considered harmful, like you hold to things that are antiquated, that hurt people. And of course, all this is tied to the sexual immoral revolution and all of the various things that go with that. But the point is this. Aaron draws a framework and provides, you could even use the word taxonomy, for the kind of culture Christians are living in now, and it's one in which we are viewed as negative to culture, as negative to civilization, as harmful, or as I said Sunday, as dangerous to society. So that's where I drew that comment. I've been thinking about it for obviously about a year or so. Tend to agree with Aaron's perspective and his analysis, and I just shared that Sunday. So if you want to dive more into that, I would encourage you to pick up the book. It's called Life in a Negative World. He goes into a lot more detail, even giving strategies and ways to live in a negative world. But it's Life in a Negative World. The author's Aaron Wren. It's got about four parts to it. Not a very long book, but I would encourage families to get it. And if you have teenagers, I think having them read it with you, or maybe as a family going through it, would be a fantastic idea, because this is the kind of world that our kids and their kids will live in. I'm still praying for moments of revival, for windows of refreshing, for moves of the Spirit, for situations and scenarios like the Asbury Revival, or moments in which the Holy Spirit works in tremendously manifest ways. I'm praying for those in our city, on our campuses in Iowa, within our church. So I'm not saying that those kind of situations can't occur in the middle of this. Just be aware that when they do occur, when God's power is poured out in manifest ways, it will be seen very clearly and distinctively. It will not be hidden. It will not be considered normal. I'm praying for that, because this is what I think is the answer, and I use that generally, but this is what I think is the answer in a negative world. I think the key strategy, and I'll even use the word answer, it could be nuanced to, on 10 levels, but let me just say this. I think the general overarching answer is summed up in the word distinction. I think it is beyond high time for God's people to embrace distinction. And again, I'll just share this with you. As a pastor, as a preacher, I think this is one of the reasons that seeker-sensitive type of preaching, seeker-sensitive type of ministry, and even seeker-sensitive churches, this is why I think they're waning. Because I don't think lack of distinction, lack of clarity is helpful at all in our culture if we're trying to blend more and more so as not to offend anyone. We've lost that battle already. In fact, greater distinction is the name of the game. Now, I'm going to maintain, like I have said before, a strong spine and a sweet, big smile, all right? I'm not advocating for any type of a rudeness or impoliteness, but I will continue to maintain and contend that clarity, distinctiveness, convictional preaching with courage and compassion is the call of the day. That's what we need more of. And so I think distinction in our membership, distinction in our preaching, distinction in our processes, distinction in our convictions, that must just permeate everything that we do. Because in a negative world, distinction is what gets you a voice. It's what gives you a platform. I'm not saying we're seeking a platform only. But if you're just like everyone else, then why would anyone listen? And this is why I'm so thankful that at our church several years ago, the elders together, we really sensed the need to clarify some things in our membership process. And I remember the two words that guided us in that were distinction and protection. And the reason those words surfaced is because we just wanted to make our process extremely clear so that those who were joining First Family weren't joining something that later they might look back and say, well, I didn't know you believed that, or I didn't know we held to that. And so we had every single person, whether you were a member or not, we had everyone re-up based on knowing full well what we believe doctrinally, what we hold to practically in our different position papers and the different ethical standards and how we would approach things in regards to church discipline. All those things were kind of laid out. And so in every membership class now, every single person who joins knows what we believe, where we stand. So there's nothing hidden. It's greater distinction. And we feel like as that's known, then there's a greater protection within the membership. We are able to vet better, and we're able to stand together better. We're able to support and help better. And so those two words became really key words for us in that whole membership drive that everyone had to go through and kind of re-sign, you know, up. It was protection and distinction. And I'm convinced after reading Aaron's book about a year ago, and even just finding ways to incorporate some of his thoughts into my preaching, and even like I did Sunday, I think the real answer to knowing how to live in what is a negative culture, or as I said Sunday, in a society that now sees us as dangerous, not just folks they disagree with, living in a society where they look at us and say, it's not just untrue, it's unsafe. How do you live in that culture when perhaps you're in the crosshairs of people and, you know, being canceled is always something that's just, you know, on the docket? I think the answer is not to be ashamed. It's to have great clarity and courage in your lifestyle and in your language, and then to just live as one with great distinction, unashamed boldness for the sake of the name of Christ and the gospel. And so I hope you're picking up on that. Hope you're hearing more of it from your elders and your small group leaders and your different ministries. That's just a little more on that whole, you know, perspective I shared Sunday. That was the thing someone asked, and I think I got it from several different angles. I'm really glad folks were curious about it. I'm glad it kind of sparked some interest. And I trust you'll join me, not in trying to shrink back from what we believe, but actually to engage more and to come to the table with great distinction and clarity about what the Bible says regarding a host of issues and matters. Just bring the Bible to the table, and let's, with courage and compassion, help people meet Jesus, find forgiveness, restoration, and see their lives change, because the gospel is the answer. Jesus Christ is the answer. And this is not the time to be unclear, to be fuzzy. This is the time to be clear and distinct and bold and courageous, because living in a negative world, living in a world that thinks you're dangerous and unsafe, now's the best time to show that the opposite is actually true. There's no better place than in Jesus to make sure you believe and have found your meaning and wholeness, and everything about life is found in Jesus and his gospel. So if you want more information about that, I'd encourage you to pick up the book Life in a Negative World by Aaron Wren, or you can text me, email me. I'd love to chat more about that. But that's what I know at First Family and its elders and our staff, our leadership. Man, we're completely committed to distinction and protection among our members as we together navigate living in a world that unfortunately thinks we're unsafe. We're going to show them by our distinctive lifestyles and by our compassionate courage that is actually the opposite. There's no safer place than right in the middle of God's hand. That's where everyone should live and reside, and it comes through faith in the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Thanks for listening to the Extra Point Podcast. To find more content and resources to grow deeper in your relationship with Jesus, go online to firstfamily.church/resources.